Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
And I'm feeling great.
I'm doing great.
Happy Monday to you, boys and girls. One question only. How do you feel?
Well, I feel good and I'm doing well.
That's all that really matters when we come to you live for the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans Studio. Rocket Mortgage with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. And our toll-free line today, 855-212-4227, as we break down week number two of the NFL, brought to you by Geico. Great news. Quick way you could save money switching to Geico. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Our next guest played 8 seasons in the NFL, including a Pro Bowl year with an 80-pass season for nearly 1,300 yards and 16 scores in 07. He was the number 3 pick in the NFL draft, played for the Browns, the Jets, the Niners, and the Seahawks in his NFL career. He's also the only wide receiver in Big Ten history with 1,000 yards receiving in 3 consecutive seasons. And at Michigan, had an unbelievable collegiate career. Joining us as he has written a new book called Doing It My Way, Braylon Edwards in studio. Braylon, good morning, man. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me.
I appreciate you dropping on by, man.
And here we are.
Yeah, today we've talked a lot about Antonio Brown's debut with the New England Patriots. Do you think that Antonio Brown knew he would become a Patriot as he kind of shot his way out of town in Oakland?
That's a tough one. I personally would say no. I don't think it was one of those things where he had this plan the whole way. It was like under the cover type of rap deal that he was going to do all these weird, quirky things to eventually get let go. And then once he got let go, end up in New England with his boy, his new best friend, Tom Brady. I don't think so. I mean, I could be wrong, but I don't.
When you look at AB yesterday, 4 catches, 56 yards, touchdown, hugging Tom Brady, do you think that this thing has legs? Can it last the entire season with AB, you know, playing nice and playing within that organization?
I just think you look at what happens when people go up there to New England, when they get around Belichick, when they get around Brady. People had a lot of things to say about Randy Moss when he was leaving the Raiders. Look what happened when he got there. People had a lot of things to say about Josh Gordon, and they still do. The verdict's not out. But no, but everything is positive as it comes from Belichick about Josh Gordon, as it comes from Brady. I think they just have a way of doing it. And I don't think it's over-the-top disciplinarian action. I think they just put a system in play in which you just can look at the model and see it's successful. Like, hey, you can have your individual success, but if you do this thing the right way, you'll get a ring. You'll get the respect that you want and that you need and you deserve if you do it right. And also, you can finish the right way. A lot of times people do extremely well when they finish in New England because they have that reputation that they did it the right way. So I think it has more than legs. I do. I think it has arms, a head, and torso.
You know, you were a guy that was a wide receiver, and you heard tons of criticism over the course of your career. Selfish, me guy, et cetera. Right. When you hear that about Antonio Brown, what do you think?
I think it just depends on, like, certain things I can understand where fans come from. Certain times I think you have to take a step back and then look what a guy does. I don't think AB is any more selfish than any other receiver or any other player that wants to win. I just think when you play wide receiver, this is what I've always said, is you're on an island. Like, everyone gets a chance to see everything you do all game, from running routes to catching passes. Like, it's you. It's you out there fighting. You're the only position where you can be open all game long, and it takes everything to be right for it to work. So that can be frustrating a lot of times for a player. You go out there, and you're open, you know, 65 plays, and then they throw one pass your way, and you drop it, and now everybody's going crazy. What about the other 65 plays that you didn't see where I destroyed my man, I blocked him well, I did things? So I think that feeds into a lot of times the characteristics or the personalities that we have. You know, a lot of times running is different. You can be a good running back with a bad offensive line. Barry Sanders proved that. I mean, he was great. You know, you can be a bad offensive line, but you can get picked up by the left guard if you're a left tackle, and vice versa with the center. Like, you need everything to work as a wide receiver for it to work. Line has to block. Quarterback has to see the blitz, has to call it out. Running back has to pick up the blitz. Other receivers have to run their routes the right way so that you can get open. So it's just an interesting position on the field.
Braylon Edwards joins us this morning on the show. In your book, I mean, you address the criticism that you got over the course of your career and named that you were called and stigmas or reputations that you had. When you look back at it, do you wish you had handled things a different way, or do you just have a different perspective now, having now been out of the game?
More so just a different perspective. You know, I don't think I would have handled anything any differently, to be honest. I think I actually would have said more in terms of a lot of times when you deal with situations, you know, media wants you to be a certain way. They want to protect the brand of the team, which I did too. But in doing so, a lot of times you don't get to tell what's going on, or you don't get to give an honest assessment of what you see so that they can hear it out of you. They get what the media tells them, and then, well, what we tell them now, because I'm on the other side of the table, what we tell them, and that's it, as opposed to being able to, you know what, this was what going on in this situation. This is how I feel, regardless of anything else. So the book is called Doing It My Way. I feel like I did it my way, and I don't have any regrets. I mean,
what would you have said at the time if you knew what you knew now? What do you feel like you kind of held back on?
I'll give you an example. So when I got traded from the Browns to the Jets, which was the best move of my life, I'm very happy to Eric Mangini. But Eric Mangini wasn't doing so well with the team in terms of winning over the players, in terms of getting that start, a decent start. I think we started off 0-3. And then I was traded. But after the second loss, he had a meeting because he didn't believe players were on board. Players were trying to jump ship. Players weren't in agreement with his policies and his rules. He had a team meeting, and he said, hey, if any player wants to be moved or doesn't want to buy into the system, after this team meeting, come upstairs, talk to me, and we'll do our best to get you moved, to get you moved. Fast forward, after game three, that evening and that Sunday night, that's the incident I got into with LeBron James' friend, Eddie Gibbons. He and I got into a fight, an altercation outside of Cleveland nightclub. Him and his boys tried to jump me, and it's going to be me or them. I'm by myself, and I stood my ground. I just happened to win and play ball. So fast forward, then when I get traded that Wednesday morning, that following Wednesday morning, it seemed as though I got traded because I got into a fight. And then the fight comes. I was like, Braylon's a hothead. He's a troublemaker. He's a distraction to the team. So, you know, and I never said anything. I was the first person to go talk to Eric Mangini after that meeting, 2 weeks prior to that fight. And I was very respectful. I said, hey, I've been here for 4 years. This will be four. This is going on five that season. I just don't think this is a winning environment. I said, I don't have anything against you. I've just been here long enough. If you could, I would like to, you know, you look around, see if you could do something for me and move me. Me and my agent would like to, you officially the shoppers. He said, okay, get back to you. Fast forward, I got traded, and everybody was like, oh, he got traded because he's a distraction. He got traded because he got into a fight. I talked to Eric Mangini 2 weeks before that fight. Little stuff like that is what I wish I could have said, because when I went to New York, I was so happy to get out in Cleveland that I didn't say anything to the press. Like, I never even talked about the fight. Every time they talked to me, hey, it's a legal matter. It's ongoing. You know, I'm just happy to be a Jet. I'm here to do it the right way. What I wish I would have said was I went personally to talk to Eric Mangini after a team meeting in which he asked if any player wanted to jump off the ship, if you will. And 2 weeks later, it just bad timing. But that's one of the things I wish I would have done is say that.
So you're in Cleveland, and LeBron James's friends.
Friend of a friend, to be honest. Not even LeBron's boy, but yes.
Multiple guys jump you?
Yes, four. Well, they tried.
Four of them.
Yeah.
And you were able to hold your ground of four guys.
I knocked two out, and then the other two kind of backed up. And then an officer that's usually out there every Sunday night, who I know was like, Braylon, get out of here, go home. Like, you know, just making sure I didn't, you know, get in trouble. So I jumped in my car, and I went home. That was it. Left early, too. It wasn't even like a 2 o'clock deal. It was around like 11:15. So I left to go home, but because I'm an athlete, because I'm a big name, it didn't matter that I was getting jumped. What matters is I won the fight. I am an athlete, so they automatically assume that we're stronger than everybody, and, you know, it's a bad look.
You're a star player in right. Cleveland at that time when LeBron's a star player in Cleveland, his right. first tour. Did you ever talk to him about this?
He and I were friends, leading up to this, and I feel like the way in which it came about, it just wasn't handled the right way, and then it caused some friction. because he and I were friends. We would not necessarily go out together, but when we would see each other out at restaurants, we'd hey, how you doing? You know, I pay for his tab sometimes. You know, he didn't need it. You know, he paid for mine, et cetera. Buy him a drink, say hi to his wife, Savannah. Like, we, Eddie, I know his stepfather, et cetera. We were friends. So when this happened, I feel like neither one of us got a chance to talk to the other party. Because I remember him getting interviewed the day I got traded. And I remember him, he's like, I don't know what Braylon was doing, like fighting Eddie. He's like fighting one of my kids or something, he said. And he's always been jealous of me. And I just don't understand where that came from. I feel like he got put on the spot. And maybe that's the first thing that came up. Because you got to remember, he's still young at this time. This is 09. This is 10 years ago. LeBron's, what, 34 now? So yeah. he's still only.
Yeah, mid-20s.
Yeah, exactly. So he's still 20s. Young. And you handle things differently than we. Trust me, I know. So I never was mad at him. I just never really got the chance to, hey, this is what happened. Edward Givens and I have even had conversations, and we moved past that and became friends. Not friends, but we're social mm-hmm. when I see him out. So it's funny that year, when they tried to jump me, Monty Ball went back to Monty Ball, the Wisconsin running back, who got drafted by the Vikings, I want to say. He went back to Madison that year and got jumped, but he got beat up. And so it wasn't a big deal. There were no arrests. Everything was cool because he got beat up. Now, had Monty Ball won that fight, Monty Ball would have gotten in trouble. It would have been different. So it's different.
Yeah. Braylon Edwards joins us this morning on the show. So you get drafted by the Browns, as you said, losing culture. They were losers before that. They've been losers after that. Maybe they're turning it around right now. You ask for a trade. How dysfunctional, how bad was it when you got to Cleveland?
It was tough, man. I just to give you an inkling, I played with 17 quarterbacks.
17 in four years.
Four offensive coordinators, and what was it? Five offensive coordinators, three head coaches. Two. Because Romeo did stay on for 4 years, and then Eric Mangini. But that was just in 4 years of being there, man. It's like at every turn something happened. Like my rookie year, trying to get it going. Then we had the huge staff outbreak where everyone kept getting staff. Like Joe Girovich ended up suing the Browns. They had a private settlement out of court. I caught staff infection. A couple other guys caught staff infection. That was once Kellen Winslow caught staff infection. I don't know, man. They say mistake by the late. I didn't believe in that, but bad things happen in Cleveland. And for the football organization, it was tough.
Ownership problem? Does that stem there?
So what I heard when I was there is Randy Lerner was the owner. But Randy Lerner inherited the team from his father, Al Lerner, who had passed away. Randy Lerner was into the credit card business and the banking business. And he was very, very interested in soccer. He owned a soccer team as well. He spent the majority of his time, in that realm. So it kind of was... He owned the Browns, but that wasn't where his focus was. And I think a lot of that played into Phil Savage, the GM, taking on the onus role, but not necessarily, making the best decisions, et cetera. So in order to win, as you watch TV, you see these owners in the league. Which owners win? The owners that are sleeves rolled up, they're at the practices, they're in the meetings, they're in the meetings in terms of which players are coming in, which players are not coming in, how much money is going on, how much money is staying in. We need this guy. All right, do you really need that guy? Yes, we do. We're going to go ahead and get you that guy. Those are the teams that win.
Right, the engaged owners, yeah. The ones that actually have a vested interest on a daily basis of how they do, but then allow the guys behind them or under them to actually execute the plan. So in this book, you're really honest about that. You're really honest also about your family life and growing up and a complicated relationship with your dad as well. How complicated was it and how did that color your life?
When I say complicated, a lot of people are like, what? You and Stan didn't have a good relationship? I'm not talking about that. My father was always there for me. My father was always in my life. Wherever I live, my father always moved around the corner because obviously he and my mother went together, but he always stayed around the corner, walking distance. So he was always there. It just was a sports dynamic relationship. Like it was, I didn't get whoopings by him. I didn't get disciplined by him. I didn't get, anything. Schoolwork was, go to your mom and handle the schoolwork, whatever. But it was sports was our relationship. So for me, I always felt like I had to be great or good for our relationship to stay strong and stay intact. Like if I'm running track, I got to win. I got to win. Like, if I'm playing football, my teammate, I got to win, but I got to go out there and catch some touchdowns. Baseball, I got to hit some home runs. So it was always this, you know, this subconscious pressure to do well, perform well, so that my father and I would have a good relationship. And I realized later on, looking back, it wasn't the case, but it just seemed that way. Like, some people don't know how to show love, but then if you ask them, they'll tell you, you know, you mean the world to them. So a lot of times, just don't assume as a kid. Like, just ask, hey, Dad, do you love me? Hey, how much do you love me? And they'll tell you, and then you don't have to, that weight is lifted. And I was like, oh, cool, I can go out there and suck. In that case, I can go be a cartoonist. Like, I really didn't want to play football anyway, no. So, but yeah, no. So, yeah, looking back, everything in perspective was great.
Really. Yeah. Braylon Edwards joins us here on the show. He's got a new book, Doing It My Way. And, you know, you are posed in front of Michigan Stadium, and you had incredible glory years at Michigan. You had incredibly, you know, productive years there. And right now, Michigan is looking at Ohio State. And we wonder, this has not been a great start to the season for Michigan. And nearly losing to Army at home should never happen. Do you worry about the program falling behind Ohio State and not being able to catch them?
Well, that falling, we fell. It's past tense. We're light years behind Ohio State right now. My biggest concern, if I'm being honest, is at Ohio State, and I know this from insight, friends of mine that are former Buckeyes, which sounds weird, but it's true, former Buckeyes, and then knowing Urban and talking to Urban at Big Ten Media Day a couple years in a row, I know the pressure, and I know the respect, and I know the worst word I'm really looking for. I know the emphasis that they put on that Michigan game. 365 days a year, they are breathing, living, hating. They can't even say our name. Like, they hate us so much. So when they go into that game, that's like the one day for the rest of our lives. It's kind of like that old school 1960s football where you're just Friday night lights in Texas. Like, that's kind of that atmosphere, and that's what they bring to the table when they play it. You can feel it on them. Like, you can almost smell the hate when you play against them. Now, from our point, I remember interviewing Jim Harbaugh, Coach Harbaugh, 2 years ago, and he said we approach it like any other game. And I looked at Brady Hoke. He had said something similar. And Rich Rod, it's not his fault. He didn't know what was going on in the Big Ten. So that's not the way you approach that game. And I know it's cliche to say, well, you know, you approach every team like you approach any other team. That's BS. Like, you approach certain teams differently. We got to start approaching that game from the standpoint that they do. Like, I feel like when we go in that game, you're looking at two different preparation systems. Like, you got one team that prepared really well through training camp. They prepared, you know, the week of to play that team, and they're ready to go out there and give it your all. You got another team that's been prepping for 365. Like, they have periods each day that's a Michigan period, no matter who they're playing. Like, if they're playing Wisconsin, it's going to be Wisconsin game plan. There's going to be a period where we focus on Michigan. There's things, meetings they have about Michigan. Like, they bleed and sweat that game, and I think it's allowed them to get the better of us with that mindset.
You consider Michigan light years behind Ohio State?
14-1, you tell me. 14-1 in that game. 14-1, and we're getting better at recruiting. We're getting some better talent up there at Michigan. Jim is bringing in the guys that can compete in that game. And you look and you say, well, you know, they were a fourth and inches away from, you know, 1 year. And then last year was, you know, pretty close as well, back and forth. But you look at 14-1, and that's the mindset of that area. Because it keeps being the same thing.
Well, and Ohio State's competing for national championships.
Every
They're
year.
In the college football playoff. They have won a title recently. They're consistently ranked at the top five or top 10, and Michigan kind of keeps striving to get there but can't. Do you think that's a Jim Harbaugh problem?
I don't know if it's necessarily Jim. Something has to happen with the recruiting. And I was it 2 years ago, our recruiting, we were only like 19th, you know, and we should be better than that. So I don't know what it's going to take, but something's going to have to happen where a switch is flipped on or something is brought to the forefront. Like, what is the difference? Like, where is the disconnect? Because a couple years ago, we had, 17 players drafted, or, you know, we tied Alabama that 1 year, which were all hoax guys. But we're getting some good talent. You look at Mo Hurst, Rashawn Gary. You look at Devin Bush is going to be an outstanding, phenomenal linebacker in his league. Jordan Lewis, I think he has a shot down there in Dallas. So he's recruiting guys, but there's just that next level down Ohio State. Like, when you watch those games, like, I hate to keep talking positively about Ohio State, but if
kills you inside to do that.
It burns. Yeah, I'm a Michigan guy. I believe maize and blue. But if you're watching, it's just the next level when you watch Ohio State game versus any other team in the Big Ten. Like, with the exception of 1 year, Penn State was ridiculously, it was 2 years ago, with Saquon and Gesicki and McSorley. Like, you're just watching, like, different football. Like, they understand, like, they don't stray away from what they do. And I think that could be an issue for other schools. Like, they change the guards. They try to have different quarterbacks. Well, 1 year we'll have a running quarterback. Maybe this year we'll have a more pocket passing type of quarterback. Well, maybe we'll feature three wides. Well, maybe we'll feature two wides. Well, maybe we'll feature the running. Ohio State is going to have a quarterback that can run and pass. They're not going to throw the ball post routes and big digs and things like that. They're going to throw quick screens, get their ball into the hands of quick guys out of Georgia, out of Florida, out of Texas, somewhere. Let them do all the work. Take the pressure off the quarterback. You're going to have big guys on left and right. And then on defense, you're going to have guys that are like Al Davis basically recruited this defense, because they're all going to be fast and move around and fly. That's been their motto since I was there. And it hasn't changed. Whether the guard has changed, that hasn't changed. That's been Ohio State football. And I think that's how you continue success. You can change some quarterbacks or some players and things of that nature. But if you have the same mindset and the same characteristics, you have success. Ohio State has had continued success, but they've had the same model in place. Am I wrong?
No, you're right.
Terrell Absolutely. Pryor, JT Barrett, Justin Fields. You keep going down that list. Braxton Miller. Very, very similar guys.
Got that right. Yeah. Braylon Edwards has a new book called Doing It My Way, My Outspoken Life as a Michigan Wolverine, NFL Receiver, and Beyond. It's a really cool read. Really opens up, I think, a lot of windows into the life of a professional athlete and a star athlete in college and how you handled everything, and you're really honest in it. So this is a really cool read. Check it out. It's available everywhere. Braylon Edwards, Doing It My Way. This was awesome, man. We got to do this again.
You let me know, man. I'll be here.
This was really, really cool. I appreciate
the
time.
No problem.
Yeah, come in anytime. Braylon Edwards, our guest this morning on the show.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.